Hi, my name is Con Koutsikas and this is A Cuppa with a Conversationalist, an entertaining, educational and informative program with a broad array of guests with unique perspectives and experiences. And for more information about my coaching and workshops, visit my website at www.conkoutsikas.com. Welcome to another episode of The Cuppa with the Conversationalist. My name is Con and I am the Conversationalist. And yes, I have my latte in tow as always. My guest today is Simone Douglas. Simone is a business powerhouse, is the publican and licensee of the Duke of Brunswick Hotel and the Port Admiral. She's executive director for BNI North Adelaide, CEO of digital marketing AOK, owner of the cafe DOB on King William, and best-selling author with her books Seriously Social and The Confident Networker. As if Simone hasn't got enough going on, she also sits on the branch council for the Australian Hotels Association, SA Branch, and is co-founder of the Hospo Owners Collective. Her businesses have garnered more awards than she can comfortably include in a bio, and her passion for supporting business, community, and industry is very, very well known. Simone's down-to-earth attitude makes her someone that people feel comfortable around, and she loves supporting others to be successful. Welcome to the show, Simone.
Thanks, Con. Thanks for having me.
Absolute pleasure. Simone, let's get straight into it. Your introduction is just phenomenal in terms of the businesses that you've got going on and your involvement in associations. Where does this entrepreneurial streak come from? Was it your environment? Is it DNA? Where does it come from?
I think it's hard, I suppose, to pin it down to anything in particular. So I had a pretty big corporate career until I had kids, but I was always very easily bored and looking for the next thing that I could do or entertain myself with. So when I got out of hospitality and corporate the first time, I did a lot of study and I learned some new skills. I did a diploma in transpersonal counselling and I started learning about registered training organisations. And I've kind of bounced around a whole heap of different careers. So there's always been a rule for me that I can really do whatever I want. I just need to decide whether that opportunity is something that I'm going to find interesting or not. And I think that, you know, that happened, you know, very early on in my career. And so once I'd started a couple businesses and nothing went horribly wrong, my appetite for risk increased. And if you have a really healthy appetite for risk and you can back that up with determination and resilience to push through the difficult parts, because there'll be difficult parts in every business, then, you know, it's quite easy to expand. I think the challenge often, and particularly for women, perhaps more so than men, is that people think that you've eventually attained enough and you should stop. You know, so I get lots of conversations or you know, Facebook messages going, don't you think you have enough on your plate? Yeah, don't you think, you know, shouldn't you be more focused on your children? Those kinds of things. And it's but it has the opposite effect, because then I go, well, actually, you know, I'm fitting as much into this very short life as I can, and doing as much of what I love as I possibly can. So, no, I don't think I have enough. And then I hire people and put people around me to support me to be able to do everything that I want to do. And I think that that's often the mistake that people make. They try and do it all themselves. And so, yes, one business is too much for you if you're trying to do it all yourself. But if you've got, you know, a great team of support, both internally and externally with service providers, then you can achieve a lot more.
It's interesting you talk about team and people around you, and I actually have a specific question about that and I'd like to address later on, because it's certainly one of the biggest challenges that I see business people face pretty much at any level of business. So we'll get to that. One of the things I do want to talk about is business is tough, and we know it's tough. You have your moments, and particularly, I look at somebody like yourself that has got so much going on with various businesses, your associations, family. And just big shout out here, your availability to come on the show. I congratulate you for that. You're one of the most accessible people that I've met in my life. So I thank you personally for that. What do you do in terms of Simone time? So do you book it? Do you say, right, Wednesday morning I'm not answering any phones. I'm not talking to anybody. What do you do in terms of your self-care, your mental health?
Yeah, so I'm a big believer in literally being in the present and in the flow of everything that's happening. So this whole, concept of work-life balance, I think, is a crock. I've never met a successful entrepreneur that has this magical thing called work-life balance. But, you talk to any of them, they all talk about work-life harmony, and understanding where you're trading things off and what the payoff for you is. So, I'm very focused. I have a very clear routine, or what I like to call my happy bubble, so I don't tend to compromise on that. I'm not the kind of person that turns on the television in the morning or listens to the news, or and I have very tight routines. And then when it comes to self-care, I'm blessed to have a really good infrared sauna and a lovely swimming pool at home, and that's my self-care. So most afternoons, if it's the week that I've got the kids and I pick them up from school, by 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I'll be in the sauna for, three quarters of an hour, and then I dive straight into a freezing cold swimming pool. So that really shocks that fight or flight response out of the system. And even if I don't have the kids, at least two or three times a week, that's, part of my process. I still play competitive sports. So I play hockey, every weekend on during winter. I don't train because I don't make the time to train, but I still, get out there with a team sport, which again is really good for your mental health. And I think too, loading in rewards for yourself. So, I was talking to someone about reward psychology the other day, and they talk about reward discounting and, the little rewards. So when you're working towards something really big, or you're saving for something, that's quite expensive, let's say a new house or whatever it might be, then you have to find little rewards to make it worth your while along the way. So often my little rewards are, right, we're going to go out to a nice restaurant and spend the money and have a really good dinner, or I'm going to spend the day down at a winery just, wine tasting, because I work really hard and I enjoy the work, but the trade-off for that is I want to be able to do the things that I want to do socially or recreationally as well. So
really good points. Earlier, as I said, you mentioned about the importance of surrounding yourself with good people. And certainly an aspect of that is staff and recruitment. Now, we know that as a result of COVID, a ridiculous amount of people left the industry for obvious reasons, and whether they started new industries or whatever. We're currently looking at an unemployment rate of about 3.7%. And so without boring my listeners on the math, take out people who are not of employment age or over employment age, take out a whole heap of other factors. We're at about 500,000 people who are unemployed who would be able to work. Now, I've read about restaurateurs who have paid people, they've sponsored people from overseas to pay them to work because they cannot get and keep staff. You're running multiple businesses. What are you doing? What are your keys in terms of not only recruiting the right people, but most importantly, the retention aspect of keeping them?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think we just went through the recruitment pain, because obviously with the Port Admiral, we've just reopened. So we had to recruit 30 staff in one hit, which is a significant, you're going out into a pretty bare talent pool to look for those staff. But, you know, funnily enough, it's the power of the networks that you build over time that deliver you the human beings that you need and the right types of human beings that you need as staff. So, you know, there are labour shortages across pretty much every industry, including hospitality, and retention is a big issue. Thankfully, and touch wood, it's not traditionally a big issue for us. So we haven't had any problem finding talent and keeping talent. We probably have one of the lowest, the lowest churn rates out there. So generally my staff stay with us for, you know, anywhere from like 3 years and above, which is unusual in hospitality. But some of those networks, some of those staff, they worked for me, you know, 15, 20 years ago in venues that I used to manage when I was in corporate. And I've maintained those relationships. So as I've moved, as I've changed, I haven't burnt any of those bridges. I've stayed in touch. We've been friends on Facebook. And I post a lot of things that are happening in my businesses that showcase the type of employer we are and the type of work environment that we create. And, you know, it's about positioning yourself as an employer of choice, someone that looks, you know, it needs to look like it's fun, a fun place to work, but that the staff are valued and that they're appreciated. And, you know, I think it's a challenge. There was a really good video posted by, I think it was Simon Sinek the other day on TikTok, which is where I get all of my good videos these days. He was talking about, you know, being an employer is a tough gig now, because once upon a time, all you had to do was provide a job. That was it. So here's the job. This is how much I'm paying you. Here's your roster. You turn up, you do your work, you go home. Now the expectations from people coming in are that you're providing, you know, an environment as well as a job. You're, supporting their mental health. You're available to talk to them about, you know, you're meant to provide meaning now to their lives, like meaningful work. Now, most employers don't have the depth and breadth of training or experience to get close to not being stressed out by trying to provide all of those things. And I think I'm really lucky that, you know, I spent time, I had my own counselling practice, so I've got lots of background in that. I've got lots of background in, positive psychology. I've got lots of background in, you know, marketing supports me to be able to understand, you know, what the triggers are for people, what's important for them, how to help people to feel valued. But it's a 24/7 gig providing meaning to human beings. And, you know, it doesn't allow a lot of space for you to have an off day. And when you do have an off day as an employer, you actually have to own it and say, you know what, I'm not my best self today. So maybe today's not the best day to ask me for a favor. Maybe today's not the best day, you know, to come and talk to me about what's going on for you. How about you make a time and come back to me in 24 hours when I'm going to be more receptive and we're going to have a better conversation?
Really good advice. Certainly being an employer now, as you said, isn't just about providing a job. You just about need a counselling degree, because we're dealing with just so many different personalities. But on top of the personalities, life's just very, very different to what it used to be. Very, very different. I guess one of the other things that I'd like to touch on is, which is quite topical at the moment, is certainly our Reserve Bank governor, who's probably not the most popular chap on the face of the earth at the moment, good old Mr. Lowe.
Yeah.
Interest rates and cost of living, and there are some people who are doing it tough for a variety of reasons. And, of course, you know, when we're told as a group that we need to tighten our belts because of interest rate and curb inflation.
Work more hours. Didn't he say work more
hours? Yeah, work more hours and, yeah, go back and live with your parents and take on flatmates. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a conversation for another day. but we look at people who are having to cut out, we'll call it luxuries, and certainly eating out, entertainment and things like that. Now, you're on the branch of the SA branch of the Australian Hotel Association. What are you hearing and what are you feeling in your businesses in terms of the effect of those interest rates and the flow-on effect?
Yeah, look, I think realistically, winter is going to go much longer than the typical 3 months is probably the best way to describe it in terms of people are going to have to make serious decisions. When you have, you know, your utilities prices are going up, you know, the wage rates decision of like 5.75% for, you know, hospitality in particular is, you know, not necessarily going to bridge that gap. So not only are people deciding to spend, they have less disposable income, but you've also got businesses' costs are going up significantly. So, you know, our utilities bills, you know, as it stands, my electricity for one of the venues is over $3,000 a month. So, you know, if that goes up and then you've got gas that's sitting at, you know, nearly $4,000 a quarter, and then you've got wages are going up by 5.75%, but super is also going up. And the cost of everything else that you buy and purchase to make and create the service experience and deliver a product, that's all going up too. So it's a, what it becomes is the venues who create real community and real connection, the venues that create something that people yearn for beyond the transaction, are the ones that are going to survive, not necessarily thrive, but they'll do okay through the process because you've created that connection. You've gone beyond the transaction. You're living in an emotive state with your customers. But again, that's a skill that people have to actively cultivate. And in hospitality, we're often, even though we create those things when someone walks into the business, we're quite transactional with the way that we talk about it. We're quite transactional with the way that we market it, you know, $20 palmy and pints or whatever it might be. And as a marketing, I suppose, tool, you've got social media and everything else. Again, you're going to have to move beyond transaction and into conversation and into connection if you want to draw in the people and become their little reward for the week. Okay, so everyone is still going to reward themselves at least once a week. That's the reality. They're going to, you know, it might be that they go and have one knockoff pint at the pub. That might be their whole reward for the week if you know, dollars are super tight. You know, they catch up with their mates and have a debrief. But you need to be that reward. You need to be the thing that they're craving and yearning for in terms of connection and in terms of feeling okay and feeling seen and feeling heard. And then your customers will stay with you and support you, as opposed to if you're just the place that, you know, when they walk in the door, you make them feel like you're doing them a favor, taking money out of their wallet. And there are some hospitality venues where that's exactly how you feel.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're not going to do so well. So, yeah.
I love that. Think beyond transaction. What, apart from, well, obviously, as you said, the winter is going to be a bit longer than 3 months.
Yeah.
And as we try and pull out that crystal ball and look beyond, what do you see as your, or not just yours, but business in general, the biggest challenge, let's call it in the short to medium term?
I think there are two. So I think that the two challenges that you're going to have are finding and securing new clients and new work and, you know, all of those things. And then the second one is maintaining your mental health on the way through. Okay, because business owners, we're used to being under pressure and, you know, in challenging circumstances, because businesses are roller coasters. You have good days and bad days, and, you know, so COVID, I think, though, put everybody's mental health definitely to the test. And I think as a direct result of that, there are a lot of people who, you know, have almost like a post-trauma response because they've had to hang on for dear life and get their business through those 3 years. And even though we're, you know, a couple of years out the other side of that, that muscle memory is still there. So when you start to have issues in the economic climate, it triggers that muscle memory. So you might not even know why you're tense or why you're a little bit more grumpy than normal or a little bit more snappy, but it's quite probably, you know, your body and your system is going, oh, here we go again. I need to get ready. This is going to be awful. So having a community of other business owners around you that can support you, that understand what you're going through because they're going through it, that you can have really honest conversations with, is going to be really critical. So, you know, having those two mechanisms, so, you know, word of mouth and really strong referral marketing partnerships, which is something that's helped me be successful the whole way through, but then having those people who you trust, who know you, who you can have honest conversations with, so you're not taking it home to your families, so you're not, you know, because you can't have those conversations with someone that's drawing a wage, okay, because they don't get it. We love them, and it's not to say that they're bad people, but they don't get it because they don't live it. They don't, you know, they're not sitting there looking at the fact that they need to pay their super in the next couple of weeks to make sure that they get the tax deduction before the end of the financial year. They don't watch their entire bank accounts disappear when it's time to pay the GST, you know. They're not dealing with hiring and firing of employees and the fallout that goes with that in the same way as a business owner is. So you need to have those people around you who are in it, you know, like in the arena with you. And I forget where that quote comes from, but there is that quote about, you know, be in the arena and you know, work with and surround yourself with other people who are in the arena on the battlefield as opposed to cheering on the sidelines.
Yeah. I think it was Brené Brown that said something along the lines is, I'm not interested in anybody's opinion unless you're in the rink getting your ass kicked.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So
and so that's certainly a common thing that I hear from business associates who they lack that network to be able to be a sounding board for them. Because you're right, as much as your friends and your family love you and you love them, they don't get it. And my daughter is an absolute classic example. Been in business for a few years now on her own, and she's working her absolute tail off and doing well as a result of her hard work. But she's getting comments from friends, oh, why can't you come out tonight? Why can't you do this? Oh, you've got a business, you've got money. And they just have zero concept.
Yeah, of what it involves, what it takes. Yeah.
And just for the listeners to put some context into something that you said a moment ago, Simone, with regards to your electricity at one venue for 1 month being $3,000, for those that know me and are in my Facebook group, I posted the other day, I got notification from AGL, may they rot in eternal purgatory, that my electricity rate was going up 34%. 34%. So this is my little place here. So put it in context, listeners. Simone's electricity bill is $3,000 a month. Add 30% onto that, $3,000 all of a sudden becomes $4,000. You've just inherited $12,000 of cost.
Mm-hmm.
Like that.
Yeah.
You know, so Next time, my listeners or anyone is going out and they're having a bit of a sook about prices going up, don't take it out on the poor venue owner or the business owner. There's other areas that we need to address. Simone, what would you put down the key attributes, say two or three key attributes to your business success?
I do the things that other people aren't prepared to do.
Give me an example.
Yesterday I picked the kids up from school. We got home in the afternoon, and I could have just like hung out with the kids and gone out the back and enjoyed the backyard. But I spent, 45 minutes doing three things that I needed to do that were going to move my business forward. And it's often, you know, it's the extra, some of the people I talk to, they talk about the extra half hour, do the extra half hour, get the stuff done that you're avoiding. Get the stuff done that's holding you back so that you can keep moving forward. And I think the other thing is I don't see work as work. So I don't split. If you said to me, how many hours do you work a week? I'm like, I don't know. I know that I live 24 hours. Well, I live 24 hours a day. I'm asleep for at least 7.5 of those. But it's about I enjoy all the things. And if you enjoy all of the things, nothing's work. If nothing's work and everything's just life, then it's a very different, you come to it with a very different attitude.
Mm.
I think there's that, and also I play to my strengths when it comes to when my brain likes to function and what kinds of things it likes to work on at different times of the day. So I know that from, 7 in the morning till like 9:30 a.m. Is my best shot at doing any complex thinking or creative stuff that needs to get done. And then I need to move into more transactional things that are just, A plus B equals C. But if it's complex, I do it very early in the morning when it's quiet, when no one's bothering me. And then if I'm tired at like 3 in the afternoon, I'll just disengage for a couple of hours, and go, well, I'm going to go for a walk or I'm going to do whatever. So I'm not bound by a 9 to 5. I'm not bound by... these are the times of day that I work. I'm bound by, I feel like doing that or I need to do that, so let's do it. And I think that the trick is if there's something in my head that says I need to do it, then I do it. So it doesn't matter how much my system pushes against that and says, no, I want to watch TV, I want to lie down on the couch, I want to have a whiskey. If my head says I need to, then I just get it done. And that's how you move forward. If you, particularly like with 5 businesses, it's the only way you move forward is that you have to do the things you need to do.
Indeed, indeed. Obviously, you've got a variety of businesses. You're a publican, digital marketing, director of BNI. I know, and as we spoke about earlier, the hotel, the Lord Admiral that you took over recently. Mm-hmm. What are you looking for in a business when you're looking at buying? What are your key fundamentals? Because clearly you're not industry specific, even though I'm going to suggest that you've got a strength in hospitality.
Yeah.
What are the key fundamentals that you're looking at?
Well, funnily enough, all of my businesses have found me, often by me being a bit of a smart ass. So it's not that I actively go out there and go, I'm going to acquire another business, although... I said in my 30s that, I wanted 5 businesses by the time I was 50. That was my retirement plan. Some people go buy property. A wise man once said to me, rather than having one business that makes you all this money and all your eggs are in one basket, he goes, go out and get 5 that all make you $100,000 a year profit. And I was like, actually, I said, yeah, but, I don't want to be hands-on with all of the things. He goes, no. Build them up to a point where people are managing them for you and you just have oversight. You're just, the vision and making sure that we're moving in the right direction. And I took that on board. But the acquisition, so when we took over the Duke of Brunswick 5 years ago, I was looking for office space for my digital marketing agency. So I hired a broker because I was going to have to take on a big lease and I'm not very good at negotiating when I want something. I'm like, can I have the keys? Let's go play. It doesn't work very well. You're talking about, $100,000 lease. So I hired a broker and, came into the office and I said to him, in a perfect world, I need 100 square metres upstairs. It can be less. I'll just sublease it. I need a training room with good natural light because I run lots of workshops. And, ideally a little bar or a cafe attached to it because I host lots of networking events and I'm sick of paying people room hire. I'm like ex-hospitality. I know how to do all these things. Anyway, Space is doing all this weird stuff. My general manager at the time is like, oh, it's okay. She knows you can't find exactly what she wants. She just believes in asking for exactly what she wants. And I do. And he goes, no, I've got what you want. I had a phone call at 8:00 this morning. It's not on the market. Can you come look at it at 11? And I'm like, actually, yeah, my diary was open. So I'm like, okay. He didn't say it was a pub. We pulled out the front of the Duke of Brunswick and I was like, oh, this is a problem because I used to fix broken pubs like in my 20s. That was my job. So I walked Din did a walk around, rang my partner Alex and said, oh, you know, honey, you know that unicorn I was looking for? He's like, yeah. I said, well, I found an ubercorn. It's even better. I need you to come and talk me out of it tonight. I need you to come and have a look. And he didn't. So his background is pubs as well. So that's how we ended up with the Duke of Brunswick. And it was pretty, it was a big risk. Like I didn't have any capital sitting behind me. I'd just been divorced. I just bought my ex-husband out of the digital marketing business. You know, so I, you know, my mum lent me $60,000 of her inheritance. That was our cash flow to start it off. This thing was turning over about $5,000 a week, which wasn't enough. You know, like to give you some context, our rent is $13,000 a month. So you can do the maths on that. And, you know, and there was a rent-free period in there and bits and pieces, but there was 12 months. It took us 12 months to get it to break even. And again, the advantage of having another business that was doing very well at the time meant that I could tip that money in. But it was pretty like hairy from time to time. You're just like, okay, you know, are we going down the gurgler or are we actually making a success of this? And then the CAF, then BNI, the national director, came and asked me if I wanted to buy a franchise. And I said to him at the time, oh, I don't, it's not really going to work right now. I'm still bedding down the pub because I'd only had that for about a year. And I expected him to say, okay, fair enough. He said, oh, how long do you need? We'll wait for you. And I was like, it's not how business deals are done. You know, like you, I say no, you give it to someone less qualified, I resent them and, you know, we move on. And he was like, no, no, how long do you need? I said, oh, probably another 6 months to bed in the team. And so 6 months later, took on the BNI Adelaide North franchise. And then the cafe, my landlord at the Duke of Brunswick's been owns another building with a cafe, and he's been at me for 4 years to take that over. And I actually said no right before COVID, which was a good decision because it would have sent us broke. And but yes, and then he came back and said, oh, you know, you really need to do this. So I went and had a look and took that on. And then the poor Admiral, I sent him a photo of the article about it going into administration, said, do you want to buy me another pub? Ha ha. And he said onto it and went down and met with the landlords down there. And then the deal didn't stack up for him. And I think this is the thing of having solid networks. So he texts me and he goes, doesn't stack up for me, but they're your kind of landlords. I think you should go and have a chat to them. So that's how we ended up with the Port Admiral. So it's probably not a normal business journey. And I think that the next plan, you know, in terms of future is I want to go and find an island resort somewhere that's for sale and get all the right backers and do something kind of cool with that. So that's long term. But yeah, the business has come to me a little bit. Wow. Like obviously asking for exactly what I want helps, but they find me.
So you mentioned the tropical island, which sounds absolutely great. How do you maintain your hunger and passion? I mean, we all have days that we go, oh, not again.
Yeah.
And does Simone ever wake up and go, okay, I'm done. See you later. I'm taking my bat and ball and I'm going home. So what is your why? What is why?
I think my why is that it has to be fun. I don't know. My core purpose for being, which I think everyone should work out what their core purpose for being is and get it down to a single sentence. So mine is connecting people to people for mutual benefit. If I get to do that once a day, I'm a happy camper. It means I've lived my core purpose. You know, and that connecting people to people fits all sorts of different industries, you know, so BNI works really well for that. Hospitality works really well for that and digital marketing. So that's important. But when I have days where I'm like, you know what, you can all get stuffed. I pay you all way too much money for you to not do your jobs. And you haven't done your jobs and I've caught all the wars and balls and put out all the fires. You know, every business owner has those days where you're just like, Jesus Christ, what happened here? But then I go build a blanket fort and I turn off all of my tech and I disengage from the world and go, I'm taking 24 hours. So I have a really simple rule. You get 24 hours to sook, You get 24 hours to plan, and then you need to get on with it. That's how that works. So the only
I like that formula.
Yeah, the only person that's in charge of my life and how I play the business game is me. So I'm allowed to sook. Everyone's allowed to sook for a little bit, but you can't unpack and live there. And, you know, at the end of the day, you have to decide how you're going to change it. So you have to plan. You have to identify what have you done as a business owner that's created this environment that's not working for you, and what do you need to put in place to make that change? Because the only person that's in control is you. Like, you know, if you have a staff member who is not living up to expectations, if you have a manager that's not managing the way that you would like them to manage, that's not actually their fault, because we're actually in charge of our businesses. So, you know, you have to identify, well, what have I done wrong? Is it that I haven't been clear in my expectations? Is it a learning opportunity? Is it a personality disconnect? You know, what do we need to go through? Is it systems and processes? So make the plan, work out how you're going to fix it, and then, yeah, start executing the plan, because then you're back in the driver's seat. So there's no point wasting all your energy. And I say this to my kids, you know, because they'll go, oh, you know, the teacher's this is wrong, that's wrong, the system, blah, blah, blah. And I said to them, well, the system's not going to change. The environment's not going to change, but you can change your response to the environment. You can change how you work within the environment. So what do you need to do to find the path of least resistance? And often people say, oh, you know, path of least resistance is seen as a bad thing, but it's not. The path of, if I come up to a brick wall, let's say the brick wall is rising cost of living pressures, you know, so constricting wallets, that's my brick wall. I can't change that, but I can change my response to it, and I can go around it and go sideways and find the path of least resistance that's going to help me to be successful. Or I can sit here bashing my head on the cost of living brick wall and use all my energy and all my creativity complaining. It doesn't work. So I'm a big believer in the path of least resistance. Okay, so if I'm hitting a brick wall, let's not keep hitting the wall. Let's find a different way to play.
Mm. Responsibility is a key thing there. As you said, we're responsible for our businesses. And the minute that we don't take responsibility, the power is out of our control. So we're saying, well, we're not responsible for it, so therefore we can't fix it. And so having that responsibility. Simone, you've certainly had a very, very busy and decorated career in terms of your businesses with awards. What advice would you give to 20-year-old Simone?
Oh, good question. That's a very good question. I think the advice that I would give to 20-year-old Simone is you're actually not deficient. You're worthy of being on the same playing field as everybody else, and you do you and let them do them. And I think it took me until I was more like 30, 35 to figure that out, and it took me until I was 40 to work out that I was going to live my life unapologetically me. So that doesn't mean that you get to be, you know, an asshole.
No.
Okay. So you still have to be, you can do it with kindness, but don't compromise on who you are. Don't pretend to be somebody else. And don't tolerate, you know, don't make yourself small to make other people more comfortable. And again, that's a really common thing if you see, particularly in younger people, if they're really driven and you can see they've got that hunger and they really want to achieve things. And like your daughter is around friends who are like less hungry. Do you know what I mean? They're less hungry. That's what it boils down to. They have less of a calling to make something of themselves in the same way. The invitation is to make yourself smaller around them. Make yourself less hungry, make yourself less successful, do less of the things that you need to do in order to let them be comfortable. And you sacrifice so much of yourself on the journey as opposed to living your best life and having bucket list experiences that you didn't even know were on your bucket list, you know, because when you're hungry and when you chase things and you help everybody else do the same. So you lift everybody else up and you encourage them to reach as high as they can and as far as they can. And you support them in doing that by opening doors for them and making those connections. It's amazing. You can achieve so many things.
Simone, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you today. And I really appreciate your valuable time and certainly the insights for our listeners and viewers, a world of information. And as I said earlier, I really thank you because I know how busy you are. And I couldn't actually believe how accessible you were. And when I invited you to come on the program, how quickly I could actually get a hold of you. So thank you very, very much for that.
No, my pleasure.
Ladies and gentlemen, listeners and viewers, my name is Con. I'm the conversationalist. My guest today has been Simone Douglas. And until next time, bye for now.
Thanks for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of A Cuppa with a Conversationalist. To join in next time, follow or subscribe. And for more information about my coaching and workshops, visit my website at www.conkoutsikas.com.